Talking today with 3rd District Congressman Frank Lucas. Congressman, busy time here in the new year. It seems like you've seen a lot of legislation and a lot of nominations from the Biden administration being made and the like. Might talk about something that's just passed at the House. I know that you oppose H.R. 1. Tell me about this bill and why you opposed it.
Ron, this is a dramatic rewrite of how the election laws work in this country. Since the first Congress in 1789, the Constitution, basically, since it was ratified in 1788, leaves 85% of the election laws to states. Now, the federal government determines which year, what month we do presidential elections. He determines which year and which month we do congressional general elections. But the mechanics of registration, the mechanics of actually conducting the elections, counting and certifying, that's traditionally been a state requirement. I come from Oklahoma, and when I was in the state legislature, as you well know, we had a dramatic change in our election laws in 1992. We went from the paper ballots to the modern machines, where we used a paper ballot that scanned and preserved a copy. We have very straightforward voter registration laws. We have very straightforward absentee laws and how they're to be counted and what a spoiled ballot is. I would suggest that in spite of Speaker Pelosi and the Democrat majority's efforts to nationalize federal election law, and that's the net effect of H.R. 1, had they used the Oklahoma system, I'd be willing to consider that. But the best way to describe it is you take the most amazing parts of California law and the most amazing parts of New York election law, and that would be the federal standard. And we just can't do that, Ron. I mean, after all, in Oklahoma, we know on election night, and we know early on election night who's won, and we can be confident who's won, whether they're running for county commissioner or president of the United States in Oklahoma. But the East Coast, the West Coast, and many of the states, they don't know for days, weeks, and this time it seemed like months. So I voted against making the mess in certain states the national mess. I like the Oklahoma system. I like the way the law works here at home.
While we're talking about some of the legislation that's rolling through right now, it seems that Ms. Pelosi is on a roll. She was able to get the almost $2 trillion budget reconciliation bill. Again, pretty well a straight party line vote. The Democrats are pushing these things through. Your thoughts on budget reconciliation and what it may mean for America if we do see it passed by the Senate?
For background for our listeners, Ron, budget reconciliation was something created in the 1974 Budget Act. It's a vehicle to be used once in a budget cycle. It was designed to reduce spending, not increase it dramatically like the $1.9 trillion that Speaker Pelosi wants to do, but reduce spending. And in order to accelerate reducing spending, it set up a process for a simple majority passage in the House and a simple majority, more importantly, a simple majority passage in the United States Senate. Nancy and her bunch and the new incoming Biden administration have used it for a wish list of everything. There's about 10% of this $1.9 billion that you could put your finger on and say that will make a difference in the next few months, the next month, maybe the next year in fighting the COVID battle, because they call it the COVID-19 a reconciliation package. But in fact, 90% of the spending is 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road. They're just trying to fill the checkbook full of cash while they have a window of opportunity that they can spend over the next few years on their pet projects. That's not why we should be a part of this. I voted for the 5 previous COVID aid packages because we had to keep the country going, and we've done amazingly well in that regard. But Nancy and her buddies, it's a wish list. This means that we'll have a COVID package, a reconciliation package now. There'll be one in the fall that will fund the federal government. There'll be one more reconciliation package next spring. I predict the only 3 bills of consequence that pass will be those reconciliations, and it'll be because Nancy can slam the process without the input of Republicans or, for that matter, anybody on the outside.
So technically, this is in this fiscal year that started, back October 1, mm-hmm. is this the only reconciliation that can happen until, September 30 then?
Because they didn't do a budget last year, they used the budget process of a few weeks ago to set up a reconciliation. That will enable them to have one more budget, perhaps in May, and that will set up budget reconciliation number 2 in the fall to fund the federal government. come spring of 2022, they'll pass one more budget resolution, and that'll set up a third budget reconciliation. With a 50-50 tie in the United States Senate, where Vice President Harris breaks the tie every morning to say that Chuck Schumer of New York is the majority leader, the United States House, where Nancy only has a five-seat majority, we picked up 15 seats. She only has a five-seat majority. They barely have enough people to get this done. So if they're going to run a partisan bill, they've got to slam it. Budget reconciliation is the most effective way to slam it. So you're going to have three big slam bills in this two-year cycle. And that's about it.
It's amazing that she's holding her party totally together to get this type of stuff done.
The speaker runs the House from her side of the room with an iron fist. You can say what you might want to have about Newt Gingrich or maybe John Boehner, but I've never seen anybody as ruthless, may not be the exact word, but as forceful and intense as she is in keeping her group together. Now, when that coalition fractures the first time, then this will go off the rails and she'll have no control. But right now, the underclassmen, and that's part of the problem of operating on COVID-19. We don't have in-person committee hearings. We can't all go to vote at the same time on the floor together even. We're not in D.C. much. We spend all our time on Zoom and Web and WebEx. Opportunity for her underclassmen to develop relationships to figure out what's going on. So therefore, they're left with what they're being told by their leadership. And that won't bode well for them in 2022, a bunch of those young members.
Do you know that, of course, over on the other side, they've been busy on the Senate side. They've been busy with some of the nominations and the confirmation type process. That includes Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack coming back around for his second go-round after being the Obama secretary. Now he's the Biden secretary. Your thoughts about Mr. Vilsack as he moves forward and tries to get his arms around USDA, this different USDA?
I don't know whether my first response would be that I'm extremely pleased or extremely relieved that Secretary Vilsack is back in control at USDA. We had a rocky relationship early on when he was secretary the first time, and I was ranking member and chairman of the Ag Committee, but we developed a working relationship. We worked together on the 2014 Farm Bill. He was actually very helpful in getting that comprehensive bill passed. So of all the people that could have possibly been nominated by this administration, Tom is the best possible individual. So we're fortunate in that regard. Now, he comes into USDA where he has to reflect the national administration's priorities, things like racial justice. I think they're going to turn the USDA programs and maybe many of the USDA personnel people upside down over there. But in the name of racial justice, they're very focused at the White House on climate change. Now, I believe the secretary, from his past experiences, like myself, is a supporter of voluntary incentive-based solutions. Think about EQIP. Think about all the conservation programs we worked on together for years. But we'll see what he's able to do. He does work for the president. And then there's talk down at USDA and the White House about their version of some kind of a carbon capture bank. They want to use the money in the Commodity Credit Corporation to fund that. That causes me great angst because CCC is, in effect, the checking account for crop insurance, all of conservation, the programs that USDA runs. So if they're going to use our program money for their projects, then at the very least, they've got to replenish that $30 billion or increase that $30 billion on hand in order to make sure the programs work. He's also going to be, I think, focused on the cattle industry and meatpacking, and I believe he's supportive of things like the ramp-up legislation and act that I've worked on to try and expand access to packers. I know he's a proponent of COOL, but I've also heard the secretary say that you have to have something that will pass the WTO standards, and that's been a problem all along in that regard. And oh, don't forget, even though he's the secretary of Ag, he was the former governor of Iowa. He's a very biofuels-oriented guy, so be prepared for a push to go to 15% ethanol in the blend mix. So, but by and large, he's the best person we could hope for, but he is a part of the Biden administration, and he is a man of his background, a person of his background. So I'll work with him, and I'll help, as I did in the Obama administration, steer him in the right direction from the perspective agriculture in Oklahoma and producers in general.
Seems like that in the case of USDA, we're seeing all those releases, but I'm sure you're seeing it with a lot of the other agencies as well. A lot of special advisors being named this go-around. Climate, as you mentioned, the racial justice issue, and fair competitive markets. They really are trying to load up these agencies with a lot of people to make sure they keep the agency heads all focused.
Absolutely. That in the Soviet Union, they called them commissars when the Communist Party officials were there to make sure the army followed through on their instructions. I won't exactly use the phrase commissars here, but I would note they're not going to call them czars anymore. That caused them too much grief in the days of the Obama administration. They'll be special this and they'll be special that. But the point is they'll be driving the executive branch career people to do what the White House political department dictates.
I guess what I've heard the term czar used for Ms. McCarthy over in the White House for climate. I guess she's going to be kind of keeping her thumb on all these various people in the various agencies.
I would. It's not the December season, but I would kind of think of her as the ghost of Christmas past. Yeah. Like a number of people in this administration, you're seeing and I picked this up from the Democrats that I serve with in Congress. They're amazed at the number of Obama people who are reappearing all over the landscape in the executive branch.
You mentioned the issue of some of these cattle market issues, the ramp up, of course, a part of that measure that was passed back in December with some significant money still to be spent for a CFAP that hasn't been released by the administration yet. I know that we've been told that there's some very specific language within that measure that would basically tell USDA to spend some money on cattle producers that did not participate from that because they sold cattle after April 15 last year. Is that your understanding?
That is the intent of the language, and you put your thumb on something that all of us in cattle country will be encouraging, pushing, driving, however you want to describe it, the department to live up to what the law says under the rules, yes.
We've talked before yes. about some of these things that as it relates to the cattle markets, and we've got Senator Fisher's measure back again that would call for some regional minimums as far as, cash market activities. Your thoughts on that measure, is that something that you might see a lot of traction on, you think, this year?
I always advocate to people be careful with proposals from members of Congress who want to change the whole system into what occurs in their states. If it was totally successful, whatever they're doing in a particular state, they wouldn't need to bring the rest of us into that. A little bit reminiscent of the California standards on raising everything from chickens to livestock.
At this point, you know, I know that there's a lot of conversation about that whole topic. Are you still thinking we're going to have to probably maybe inject the government more into that conversation on price competitiveness, transparency, and the like in these cattle markets?
Remember, we're still waiting on that Department of Justice investigation on whether there are monopolistic tendencies in the packing industry, and there's some analysis that will come out of USDA. I keep telling everyone down at the department, and I have fewer contacts at Justice. That's not within my committee jurisdiction ever, but I keep reminding, do your work, get it done. If you find a problem, lay it out in a straightforward fashion. We will respond legislatively. But if there's a problem there, be upfront, be honest, be prompt, so we can take action.
Finally, we've talked before about the fact that with you not on the Agriculture Committee, you still maintain a lot of interest on especially this next Farm Bill cycle. Some of the folks that are on the committees, House and Senate, are already talking about, well, they want to lay groundwork for a farm bill in the next 2 years. Are you going to be able to keep your finger in place to make sure that when we get serious on that after this next election cycle, you'll be able to be there?
Ron, I've discovered that once you've been a chairman, you never stop being a chairman. The number of members who come to me to the floor on the floor and discuss what went on in the last hearing or what's coming up in the next hearing, or did I see this or did I see that? I don't mind being a den mother when it comes to something as important as farm bill policy and production agriculture. I would tell you that we have a dramatic change in personality in the Ag Committee leadership, with the Democrats being in control and former Chairman Peterson losing his reelection in Minnesota. Now you have David Scott from Atlanta, the suburbs of Atlanta, a totally different person philosophically, a totally different person with his understanding of the ground in that role as chairman. And on the ranking member side, we've gone from Chairman Conaway in West Texas to a ranking member Blank G.T. Thompson in Pennsylvania. Very diverse agriculture, but it's different than the ag we practice in most of the rest of the country. Think about that depth of soil. Think about that rainfall. Think about the different weather patterns they have in places like Pennsylvania. That said, this is going to be an interesting 2 years, because Chairman Scott is very focused on the racial justice issues, mm-hmm. very focused on addressing a variety of things in the past. And I'm not saying there aren't issues that have to be addressed, that should be addressed, that could be addressed. But traditionally, this is a 2-year period where you look at the farm bill in a comprehensive way. You determine what worked, what didn't work, and you lay the groundwork for those markups, actual bill consideration in 2023, the beginning of not this Congress, but the next Congress. So I'm going to hold my breath, and I'm going to spend lots of quality time with all my friends on the committee and down at the department. And we're going to make sure that we build off of the 18 farm bill as we built off of the 14 farm bill, because the world that farmers and ranchers are dealing with only gets more complicated, not less. And throw on top of that, Ron, the wild weather in recent days in Oklahoma and across the Southwest. I'm waiting to see what happened to the roots on Linda's wheat in that super hard 10 below zero freeze where I live. And I worry that not only were their calves lost, but there will be a lot of calves born in that cycle with no ears and no tails because they froze off. Mm. You just, no matter how good a herdsman you are, it's just at 10 below zero and the wind's blowing 20 miles an hour. It's tough. And I think there's an issue that we'll all need to be very careful in fertility testing our bulls this spring, to make sure that those cold temperatures didn't damage herd bulls.
Very much. One last question, Congressman, in regards to what you're really kind of focused on right now in your general circle of things, including your role on the Science Committee. What's really out there that you're paying a lot of attention to in the immediate future?
I'm trying to figure out how we undo the damage that COVID-19 has done to this country. When you literally go through a 1-year shutdown, and we, even with 3 vaccines, even with the tens of millions of people who've been vaccinated, even with the progress we've made across the country, it's still going to take more months to get enough vaccine out there to get us to the point where we can go back to whatever the new normal is. Whether it is the land grant universities, think about places like Oklahoma State and Langston University, for instance, or it's the national labs, or it's all manner of private research. For a year, this disrupted how science is conducted in this country. We know from agriculture, where we're very science-oriented, to things like the COVID-19 vaccine, you have to have a functioning, effective science agenda in this nation to make sure that we not only are watching for what comes in the way of threats or opportunities, but we can respond. Think about how fast the COVID-19 vaccines were developed. If we had not spent the previous 30 years getting ready, supercomputers, the aggressive labs, gene sequencing, and all those kind of things, it would have taken not months, but years to have had a vaccine. So we've got to help the OSUs and the Langstons and the research community in general in this overcome the last year and get those bright young men and women, undergrads, the grad students, get those programs back up and going. So that's a big part of my focus on the Science Committee.
Thank you, Congressman. Congressman Frank Lucas talking with us about a variety of issues in his world up in our nation's capital. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.